right, welcome to this episode of The Hours, back by popular demand, my friend Edward. I've gotten so many texts, tweets that said they loved the last episode you were on, Edward. So he's back. Don't worry, Mark will be back at some point in the future. You know, Edward, how has your life changed since you were last on this podcast?
Well, I've developed a cold. I don't know if that just came from the podcast or not, but
that comes from living in the Northwest.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, so that's it.
So what's the weather like in Oregon these days?
You know the answer to that. You used to live up here.
It's awful. Yeah. I forgot. I left, so I forgot.
Right. Yeah, it's just cold and not too bad yet, but gray and rain and just, you know, it is. It's starting.
Well, Phoenix, Arizona is going to be 75 degrees and sunny today on the golf courses, pickleball courts. But it's always 70 degrees in a gym. So that's, I think, true, that's why we, right, spend so much time there.
Exactly.
All right. Well, let's not bury the lead. Let's dive right in. The big question today, and I'll throw it to you first, Edward. And I get this question a lot from coaches because they're so pressed for time. You know, it's like, oh, coach, I've got 5 practices to my first game. Right? How do I install this lock left system? How many days is it going to take? So coaches are so pressed for time. They say, how do I actually do skill work in season? Or do I even do any skill work in season? If I'm asking you that, what's your answer?
Well, the answer is yes. Of course you do skill work during the season.
Why of course?
Because without doing it, you're saying how we do things now and the rate in which we do things and the level of success in which we do things is how it's going to be all year, which means we have to either play bad teams or teams, good teams we play, have to play poorly. You're cementing in your ceiling right away. And I think there's a lot of detriment to that. I think, like, just culture-wise, in terms of the culture you want to have of development, of players striving to be better, if they feel like I'm not going to get better and this is the fate of my season in November or December, I mean, man, that's a long road to March. So I think it just creates some apathy. And the stuff we say we want as coaches in terms of, like, competition and ownership and accountability and, you know, showing up extra, doing more, all those things. I mean, that's all player development. So the short answer would be yes. And that's why. I think it changes during the season of terms of what type of player development you do. I think it needs to be a little more defined to what players are doing to star in their role. So I think a couple of things that never go out are being able to shoot, being able to finish, being able to make 1-second decisions, being able to advance the ball, I think a thing that we don't talk about enough, and us being like the basketball community, is during the season, you can still raise IQs. It's not just about, like, executing sets. And I think you can take time off of people's bodies by being in the film room more, watching more film, talking more basketball. And then that folds right into the, do you have a common vocabulary? Because if you don't, development's going to be really hard to get because everything's going to be reactionary. And I would say that's the other point I wanted to make, which is, don't make skill development reactionary. Like, as a coach right now, as your season, as we sit here, November 14th, you should probably know the areas in which your players need to develop to help you do what you're going to do. And that should be systematized. And, you know, you should have a plan from now to Christmas to attack that. And a little bit over a long time equals a lot.
Yeah, that's really, the last thing you said, a little bit over a long time equals a lot. If someone wants to run a marathon on day one, you don't go run a marathon. On day one, you put your shoes on, right? And a little bit over, where I think a lot of times as coaches, we have a misconception that it has to all be now. Nothing that is really valuable was built quickly. Let me build on a couple of things that you said. I have 3 reasons, and a lot of it is going to summarize and tweak a little bit what you said. 3 reasons why you must focus on player development in your season. I intentionally use the term player development instead of skill work, because skill work assumes that a technique or a physical skill in isolation is going to transfer to a game. Whereas player development would be read plus technique. that's what transfers to a game. A lot of times as coaches, probably the misconception of like, man, when do I fit in my skill work? Let's define the terms. Not very useful definition would be stationary ball handling would be skill work, or partner passing would be skill work. You know, just pivoting with against no defense would be skill work. Or I see a lot of times people post on Twitter, coaches post on Twitter, must have fundamental drill. And there's like lines of players dribbling out, jump stopping, pivoting, passing back to the line and running back. And people think like that's skill work. And you know what? That probably is skill work, like the smallest skill work. What Ed and I are talking about is player development, which is read plus technique specific to your role within your offense and defensive systems in order to make the sum greater than its individual parts. I think that's the difference.
This is a whole different topic, but you know, the basketball calendar is crucial. And if you're doing skill work, what Tyler's talking about in November, I hate to tell you guys all this, it's too late. It's too late, which dovetails into the whole AAU problem and how we're wasting our time playing all these games and yet still having the same skill deficiencies. So for lack of a better term, coaches, you kind of got to play the hand you're dealt once you hit November. And what player development is how do I take the cards I have and still play the best hand, right? You can't change the cards. I mean, maybe a little, but that's on the kids to really do on their own. And if they haven't done it before November, now that the schedule is here and it's live and the time is even more constricted, the chances of them going uproot a skill that they've had for X amount of years in that short of a window is just not worth the time spent, right? So again, it's about where it falls in the basketball calendar. And for this time of year, it is about playing the cards you're dealt, which is player development, right? Like how does my skill set fit with all the other cards in the hand?
Beautiful. Let me give a real specific, somewhat limited example. You got a kid that is a strong driver and finisher to their right hand. Okay. So skill work would be like, let's develop the left hand. No, that's not what you're doing in November. What you're doing is you're putting them in situations and your actions in order to play to their strengths. How can they get more right-handed drives? How can you create space? How can, when they read, when they have it, how can they read when they get stopped off of their strength? So that's player development, not skill work. And, you know, there might be a little bit of skill work in season, but it's majority player development. Then hopefully you actually do have an off season. That's when he's got to go get in the lab and develop the skill of going left so that then he can actually be developed as a player on left-handed drives. So, I mean, that's the mindset shift that I think we're trying to share with coaches. All right, three quick things. If you're not yet convinced, three reasons why I think you should develop players in the season and how. One, we've all heard the term a player's coach. Guess what every player gets excited to work on in practice? Their own game. They love it, right? So if everything that we're doing in practice is like we're walking through sets and doing team, you know, defensive shell work, well, of course, players can get bored in practice and kind of burn out. But when we say, hey, it's time for you to get better, they're like, oh, let's go. They look forward to it. So a player's coach is one that does step into a player's perspective and try to leverage the motivations of your players to get you to where you're going as a team. And okay, Edward and I were actually talking offline about feel. Okay, that's a big part of feel. Two, the quickest way to a better team is better players. The quickest way to a better team isn't better plays, right? If you have two teams and one's way more skilled, the players are better. It doesn't matter what you run. The team with the better players is going to win. So if we stop developing our players, well, you're never going to get better. To Edward's point. And lastly, it will change your approach as a coach if you start to think of how can I improve our team by improving the individuals, as opposed to how can I improve our team by improving what we look like as five people out on the floor, right? So like if all of a sudden, you know, we have incremental improvement on each individual player, the product will be better, right? But if we approach it as like, oh, I need players to be in different spots, you know, if we need to run different plays, well, that's going to actually limit how quickly you improve. So that's why you should continue to focus on player development within the season.
You know, Tyler, I know you talked about this a lot through different platforms in different ways. But a couple of things I wrote down is, you know, if I was trying to listen to you to contribute, but also try to put myself in the mind of a coach listening to this. And it could seem like a lot of the stuff we're saying. So I would tell you a couple of things, coaches. One, simplify everything. I know Tyler has probably talked about that a ton in different platforms and different mediums, but simplify everything, right? And what we're saying is a lot of things, but you can actually simplify it. So I would tell you guys as coaches a couple of things. Like one, like what's the goal of what we're doing, right? And let's use Tyler's example of the kid that can only go right, for instance. Like the whole goal is, can, when he catches the ball, make a 1 second decision to either keep or get or maintain an advantage. Like everything has to be taught and built towards a goal and a concept, right? So if you don't have concepts down, it's always going to be reactionary. And therefore your lack of skill development impedes your, like, is a like roadblock to your player development. You have to have those things figured out. And then, like I said, like earlier, like what's the goal? You know, you ask a room full of players, you know, I just got back from working with a couple teams out east, and I asked them, I had like four or five teams, like, what's the goal of our offense? And they all said to score. And I looked at them like, okay, really? And they're like, wait, no, it's not to score. It's to get a, like, and they don't understand the goal. Like the scoring is the result, but they don't understand the difference between a result and a goal. So like the goal is to get an advantage and to get a shot we like. And then after that, it's just basketball math, right? We either win or but that's the goal. But if I think the goal is to run my player, if I think the goal is to get a good shot, well, then good shot then makes it, have we defined what a good shot is? It's like, so do we even know, like, I think a good shot is X and you think a good shot is Y, then. So again, I think it just comes back to concepts, really simplifying what you have and then living with results.
Okay, let's get real specific. You have a 90-minute practice in season with your team. What percent of that practice would be player development as we've defined it, right? Not skill work, but player development.
Of 90 minutes?
Yeah. Or yeah, I guess you could say percent or how many minutes of 90. That was 70. A bad question. Yeah.
Maybe more. But because everything I do is going to be player development, even if it looks like we're doing team concept stuff where we're running actions or whatever, it's still player development with the restrictions I would put on it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one could run an unbelievable practice if you just scaled up. You played 1-on-1, you played 2-on-2, you played 3-on-3, you played 4-on-4, you played 5-on-5. And within those things, you just said, okay, we are going to generate better shots on offense. And here's our definition of great shots, right? We're going to try to understand that when we're neutral, this is the action we want to run, right? And then the third thing is, hey, we want to make sure that we end every possession valuing contact and securing the rebound, every possession. And we're going to focus on that in every game that we play, right? I mean, if you just did that, that is player development within your team concepts.
Within your team concepts, right. I mean, just one little thing you said there that, you know, maybe your coaches that are with Savvy know, but maybe the other coaches don't. You said when we are neutral. I'm assuming that means like we don't have advantage baked in, like when we're like frozen, basically when old school coaches would say, run it again, pull it out, those things, that's when we're neutral, right?
Yeah, no, I appreciate you defining that for everyone. Absolutely, yeah. So at Savvy, we teach, hey, there's two phases to offense, neutral and advantage, right? And so, yeah, and so when, and then that triggers something. Advantage, nothing stops the ball from moving. We're making our 0.5 decisions, shoot it, drive it, move it, right? That's what advantage equals dominoes. Dominoes is we got to knock down the next domino. Nothing can stop the dominoes from falling, right? And then neutral at Savvy, we say neutral equals action. And that action is intended to create an advantage. The difference that we define between actions and plays is plays are for shots, actions are for advantage. And they'll look very similar, but it's like you said, it's the difference between a goal, right? And what we're trying to get as a principle of play or a process.
Yep. So coaches that are listening, part of player development, we're talking about the difference between skill and player. Part of player development is by just pick a random date. Let's just call it Christmas. Your whole team should be able to say that.
Yeah.
Right? Like, your whole team should be able to say that. And here's how they say it. They don't say it answering it to you in a test. They say it by watching film. Oh, we're neutral right now. Look at the action we went to. Hey, we had advantage built in and we stopped. Like, that's player development. If they can start to identify that, they can start to play that way. But until they can identify that, sitting down in a relaxed, out of the emotional environment of playing, until they can identify that, you're always going to be behind. And as a coach, you're always going to be frustrated because you did it. So that is player development. If your team can collectively say that in unison by Christmas, you have a shot to have a really successful season.
And coaches, you can do it. You can do it. I was coaching my daughter's third and fourth grade little girls team. And my other daughter and a bunch of her teammates on our fifth and sixth grade team were on the bench watching. You probably had like five girls from the fifth and sixth grade team watching our little third and fourth graders. And I call a timeout, and all the fifth and sixth graders, including my older daughter, are like, I got this, Dad. And they're like, girls, when you're neutral, run an action. it's crazy. I mean, it's just like, but like, they don't know any better. That's how they've learned basketball. And it's not like they're good at it at that age, but at least they have the lens of what we're trying to do, and they can see it from the sideline, obviously. They might not be able to pass and catch the ball very well yet, but they know what they're trying to do.
Right. That's it.
No, so that, and that was fun. And so that I felt like I'd done my job. You know, I've taught my children to be kind and run actions. Good father.
Yes. That's all you need.
Yeah. And then my daughters went home and fought. So then I felt like a bad father.
Can't have it all.
Can't have it all. Can't have it all. All right. Let's go with a couple of questions. How would you go about electing captains? You're the head coach. You get a call from LSU. And is that your dream? Would that be your dream job? What would be your dream college job?
Man, I don't know if I'd want to dance in college, man.
You have to coach one season of college basketball.
Oh.
Which one would you take?
Yeah, I'd probably go home.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so LSU, you're head coach of LSU. How do you go about electing captains?
Maybe this is a little optimistic of me and unrealistic, but I'd like to think I could do it. I know I could do it. I wouldn't have any. I just think it's a little outdated. I think there's a natural detachment from responsibility for people that aren't captains. I think ideally you want a culture where everyone's accountable, where everyone has a say, where everyone's voice at some point has weight relative to situation. And I think that you being voted something doesn't guarantee your actions, and you not being voted something doesn't absolve you from action. So I just think I want, and I think basketball lends itself to that, you know, with 12 people, 15 people on a roster versus football and other sports that have more. So I think you actually could have that. And I think I want everybody's voices heard. And I think the struggle that you would have early with that in knowing when and where to say things and how, I think is part of the growth you need to develop culture. So I would like to not have any, because look, you and I have gone to thousands of basketball games where we didn't know necessarily most of the people, but any of the people playing. Did you ever really need to know who the captains were? You could tell.
Not once,
you know? So, yeah, that would be my answer.
I love it. I didn't know that was going to be your answer. That would also be my answer. In fact, I would strongly encourage any of our coaches that are in our savvy coaching community to do away with captains. I think it does more harm than good. There was recently an election here in the United States. Just because someone voted for you doesn't mean that everyone that you're leading is going to respect or follow you. Because next year, half of the country is going to not follow the elected leader or not vibe with or not agree with. And so it actually creates division more than unity, interestingly enough. And I've seen that a lot. Like, oh, I've got this senior that really wants to be a captain, but I don't think they're a very good leader. But if they don't get elected as a captain, then they're gonna be, you know, a write-off for the entire year. Well, then just do away with captains. There's no value to it. Leaders are going to lead. And that's what's going to happen. So I love that. And I mean, why do we give any energy to this thing that actually matters so little? As you establish standards, it becomes your culture, that everyone leads in some way, then everyone should improve as a leader, everyone. But if I'm not elected a captain, all of a sudden it gives me an opt-out of leadership. I'm not a captain. And so I think it does way more harm than good.
It's not a lifetime achievement award in your program. Like, by the time I'm a senior, I'm a captain. I mean, if your senior is doing bad things, I don't care if they've been in your program for 4 years. I mean,
yeah.
And I want to find the younger kids that have the courage and have the eye and just need a little backing from me as a leader to push them mm-hmm. forward. I want that.
Yeah. I mean, what NBA team is giving playing time as a lifetime achievement award or leader, right? There's, you know, it's just like, what can you do to help the team right now? It is a high performance, just pressure cooker, right? I mean, I've been here for 5 years. Well, all of a sudden, Anthony Edwards walks in the door and cats yeah. out, you know what yeah. I mean? Because Anthony Edwards, right? Like, it's just like, what can you do? All right, here's the next one. We have a young, undersized, but deep team. We plan on pressing and really want to be disruptive, keep teams off balance. Should we switch or not switch ball screens, Edward?
I mean, maybe. I mean, the answer to everything is maybe. Should you be switching ball screens? I mean, can you fight over? Are the people that are setting screen for shooters? Do you need to be switching them? Does switching create an advantage? Are they setting ball screens in hope that you switch ball screens? I mean, if a team can't shoot and they set high ball screens, why aren't we just going under and bumping? I mean, there's a million things that go into that answer. So it's not as black and white as they set ball screens, we switch, we don't get hurt. So I wouldn't necessarily adhere to that. I think there are times to switch. I think there are times not to. I think it's relative to the night, relative to your personnel. I know you didn't ask about the pressing, but I would tell you, without seeing your team, that I get the allure of your small to press because you view all these kind of smaller people running around biting ankles on the court, and I get it. But I do think that that's going to lure you into a false sense of success, that when you play bigger and better teams, the longer you get into your season, they're going to be able to beat a press, right? Like, you know, not to go too deep in this, but you can't believe two things are true. You can't believe that spacing is oxygen for offense while giving the offense all the oxygen. So spacing for me is like dessert. You can't eat it every night, even if you really want to. So it's situational. There's many situations, but also think your press is going to be the reason you're not good in a half court set defensively or in a half court set offensively.
No, really good. And I'll just give you my short answer. Yes, I think you should switch. All right, without knowing any of that stuff, knowing it could change. If I don't know anything else, that's my default answer because I really like ice cream. I've got a really good rim protector, but only one. And so when he subs out, do we change what we're doing defensively? He's a rim runner, rim protector, but I don't have anyone else that's a direct correlation for him that when he leaves the game. Do we change what we're doing defensively specifically and a little bit offensively? And here's what I would suggest. You don't change your principles of play, but the solution that you use might look a little different. So, you know, if our principle of play is we want to lock the ball left and we want to make every catch a dribble, we still do that. But our solution when we do that might be a little bit different. So where he's maybe contesting things at the rim, maybe your wall or your help side is actually trying to take a charge instead. You know, like your solution will be different, but I don't think you change your principle of play. If you want to play with pace in transition, it doesn't change. But you're probably not going to have as big of a rim running threat. You might be a little bit more space and five out, but you still are trying to stick to your principles of play. So I think, you know, that's a really important distinction. And, you know, we talk more about modern coaching, or what we talk about is like a conceptual offense and defense is, hey, we're attached to concepts, not necessarily specific solutions. Right, you know your concepts don't change, but your solutions can be interchangeable based on who's available and on the floor, who you're playing against, what your strengths and weaknesses are. And once you embrace that fluidity, you're going to see solutions that you probably never saw before. Right, we've all heard the phrase that like everything looks like a nail to a hammer. Well, when you're conceptual, you're not a hammer, you're a weapon, right? And that weapon can look like anything.
Very similar to Tyler. If you have someone that has a specific skill set, whether it be physically or skill-wise, you do not change what you're doing. You edit that player's role in it, right? So if we're running, coach, to your question, right? If we're running whatever defense, and I have this player that has this unique skill set, it's easier for me to edit, hey, rim protector, I need you to not do this and to do this instead, because this is what your skill set gives us the biggest advantage. Now, when he comes out, the new player that comes in, all they do is just don't do his, they don't even know his edit because you haven't taught it to him, right? So they're right back into our structure and our system. So I think it's just easier to edit outliers than it is to have different systems relative to like packages with personnel.
Yeah. Okay. Really good. I got one more for you. And this one may or may not be a short answer. A team that's struggling with over dribbling, let's say you go in and work with a team, or, you know, you're doing some consulting for a coach and he's like, we're over dribbling. Like, we just have over dribbles, over dribbles, over dribbles. What would be a couple of ideas you might give a coach to help them, or what you might actually work with on a team in a training session to help them eliminate over dribbling?
Yeah, that's a really good question. First of all, I'd want to know what over dribbling is to that team. Because there's a difference between over dribbling and keeping your dribble alive, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know,
let's assume for a moment it is every catch is a dribble. Every catch is a dribble. So it's like the first dribble more. Yeah.
Yeah. So then first thing I would do is teach reads, how to, not decisions, reads. Can they make a space read with their primary defender to know what the option is, right? And secondly, so after we teach reads and space with primary defenders on catches, our catch reads, we teach what is the point of a dribble, right? A dribble is used, so there's two ways to attack, right? You can attack ball in hand, which is I have the ball in my hand and I need to get a pre-dribble decision. Or I can have an attack where the ball is already on the floor and now I need to get a pre-downhill decision, right? So if you're talking ball in hand, we need to teach A, to make the correct space read, and then B, equip them with the skills to get a pre-dribble advantage. And all that's done under the concepts and the ideas that the dribble is used to attack space has been created, right? The dribble is used to attack space has been created, not to create space.
Beautiful. And I'm actually going to jump ahead to our Teach Better segment right now, because what Edward just did will help us all teach better. Common mistake: over dribbling. We say don't over dribble, right? That was common. What Ed just did was he responded with teaching what to do instead. He equipped them with another option. Players will use the tools that they have. When they catch, the tool they have is, well, I'm not sure what else to do, but I do know how to dribble. They'll use the tool that they have. Edward just gave you the teach better, which is give them a different tool and they'll find a different solution. And if we see a negative outcome like over dribbling, what we then can take as feedback is we have not yet equipped them with a better tool. And so let's teach. So to teach better, you have to recognize, you have to teach the do and not just point out the don't. I mean, Edward's talk about AAU. I'm in this AAU world right now as our club teams are playing in tournaments all the time. And I'm sitting on the bench and like 90% of all words coming out of most coaches' mouth in this world is, what are you thinking? Don't do that. Don't take that shot. I just told you to do something different. You know, like it's commentary. It's just commentary on what is happening and frustration with what's happening. And that is telling on yourself as a coach. If you're commenting on the things you don't like seeing, you're telling on yourself that you don't know how to teach or you haven't taught yet. So I think that is just wonderful what you pointed out. You just did naturally. That's how you teach better. All right, let's go game of the week. And we'll finish up with this one. The game of the week is play more one-on-one. And in a second here, Edward, I'll ask for any of your favorite one-on-one type of games, constraints, where it starts, what you would teach within it. One of the things that my college coach got right, in many ways, my college coach was as old school as it goes. I got him like 2 years before retirement in his late 60s. He had won multiple national championships. We ran a 3-out, 2-in, play through the post, offense, like slow it down, set it up. So in many ways, he was very traditional. But in his practice planning, he was very progressive. We played one-on-one for at least 20 minutes every practice. We like even in like, anyway, I won't go into all the ways he was progressive. We played one-on-one every single practice with a different focus of or emphasis. It might be a defensive one. It might be an offensive one. It might be a dribble limit. It might be from a certain spot on the floor. It might be at the time limit. It might be with a different points constraints. And I would say that one-on-one is underutilized as a teaching game. So we want to equip you with a way you can maybe go and put one-on-one into your practice right away. So Edward, how would you do it? What's one one-on-one game that you think coaches could use?
What are you doing and where are you doing it from is the first thing. So it's not as simple as give me the ball and start playing. I mean, it could be, but I would tell you, like, if you have players that need to make us, let's just piggyback off that coach with the over dribbling, right? So I'm going to go one-on-one from I catch it on the wing, you hand me the ball, or I come up and off a cut and catch. You and I already have movement baked in. I have to get a pre-downhill read or advantage, and I have three dribbles. That's it. And we're just playing after that. Now, coaches, if you hear that and you're going to start to do that, literally throw your whistle away. Don't stop anything. Like, just let them get countless reps with that, because the first however many reps until it's not are going to look terrible. They're just going to look terrible, and they're supposed to, right? You give them the constraints, you have taught it, you've repped it before, and then just let them find it. Let them just play through it. So that'd be one. And you can do that with everything, right? You can do that with ball on the floor moves. You go, hey, you have to work your hesitation dribble and then play out of hesitation. You have to play out of whatever it is. So I would say, what are you doing? And what are you doing is working jabs, shot fakes, wiggles, or are you working, you know, hesitations off ball on the floor? And then where are you doing it from? And then what are the restrictions around it?
Yeah, beautiful. And I would suggest that you take Edward's advice from a couple of weeks ago when he talked about surgery. That was the term he used, right? It was So don't blow the whistle, throw it away, let it happen, but then just go and perform surgery. Like, there's going to be observations, there's going to be learnings, and then share them on the debrief. And then do it again. Do it again next practice. Do it again in the same practice. I don't know, but like, more surgery and less stopping is huge. All right. Edward, tell if coaches want to find you, want to hear more from you, obviously you're going to keep being a regular contributor here. Where can they find you if they want to go deeper with you?
Yeah, easy. Just courtsessions.com is where we are. Yeah, easiest way to get me.
Well, as always, thank you for spending the hours here with us. If you haven't heard this before, you know, the vision of naming the podcast The Hours was, it just takes a lot of time around like-minded and greater-minded people to develop. And, you know, generally your journey is going to be the sum of the people you spend a lot of time with. And so we want to spend hours with you. We thank you for spending hours with us week over week. I listen to podcasts in the car all the time, and I just find myself regurgitating and saying the things that I hear. And we thank you for investing with us. We hope that this can influence what you say and what you see as we all try to get more savvy. We try to get more expert, have more mastery of what we love, which is teaching and leading and coaching. So Mark shared a lot of times that, like, a coach, like an old school horse and buggy, a coach, it gets you where you want to go. That's what a coach is. A coach helps get you where you want to go. And I love that. And that's what we're trying to be at Savvy Coaching. And Edward, appreciate your time. And until next time, stay savvy.